Eddie Epstein, Reel 11. Right, that was going to. And the teacher told me that this class, the sixth graders, had read the Anne Frank, and they had some of them had read some other books, and they were well prepared and were very, very bright children. And so I talked to them, and then when I was done, I said, "Now I'd like, I'm open to questions, and there's no question that can't be asked. If I know the answer, I will answer it, and if I don't, I will tell you I don't know the answer, or if anyone has any comments." And a little girl in the first row raised her hand, and I think the entire time that I talked, she was not listening but looking at my hands. But because her first question, or her question was, "Where did you get those rings?" Because I was wearing a ring on each hand. And I told her, you know, where I got the rings. But it told me, you know, what I said was gone, had gone probably right over her head, or was of no interest, or she didn't understand. One of the other questions from another child was, "What was your mother's and your father's first name?" It's, yeah, it's of some interest, but it didn't show, and nor did the other questions that I was asked show any knowledge on, or preparation by the teacher. I mean, that these children just were not ready to hear this. And then at some point, the teacher said, "Why don't you talk to them about the medical experiments that the Nazis conducted?" And I said, "No, absolutely not. I will, under no circumstances, no matter how brilliant sixth graders are, talk about medical experiments. Yes, they were conducted, but we're not going into the details." One child did come up to me after I was all done, and he obviously knew quite a bit, because he said to me, "I know that one of the experiments that were conducted was blood was taken from somebody who had maybe blood type AB, and it was transfused into somebody with blood type O, and some awful things happened. Do you know whether they did it with other blood types also?" And I said, "I don't know for sure, but I presume they did." "Well, you know, what exactly happened?" And I said to him, "I'm not really sure what happened," because I didn't know how much he knew. I mean, he was obviously more knowledgeable than the others, but still, I did not want to go into details. And, you know, if this teacher ever asks me to come back, I'm going to be very, very careful about what she's really done with these children, and rather dubious about how bright these children are, because that experience was just incredibly bad. And it's, fortunately, it's the only one that's ever happened to me.
Well, when you go to universities, how well prepared would you say are university-age students about the Holocaust? You know, have they heard much about it?
Yes, they know, they're much more knowledgeable. And we can enter into some kind of, not only question and answer, but some give and take, some discussion. Even if they don't know some things, they're mature enough and knowledgeable enough about life in general that we can discuss things. What amazed me when I was in Germany in 1991, some of my speaking engagements were in the equivalent of high schools in Germany, like what is called Hochschule and or Gymnasium. And I was surprised how knowledgeable the students were about the Holocaust. I mean, not just on a superficial basis, but really in-depth knowledge. And it was more than that they were prepared because I was coming that day or something. I mean, this was knowledge that they've accumulated over a period of time, and they, I found them to be more knowledgeable than American students. But I think that knowledge that the German students have is relatively new, because there was a period when the 1930s and or 1933 to 1945 was, you know, yeah, there was a war and Hitler was there and that was it. But I think that has changed, or at least in the schools that I spoke to in 1991. Vienna was an adult group, and it was a mixed group of both Jewish and Christian people, and they were obviously well informed. You know, some of them even sort of almost like were able to, and somebody interrupted me and said, and then this happened here, which was, showed me that they really knew. It's been a healing experience because when I first spoke the first few years, in the very beginning, I always broke down. That has decreased. And once in a great while, it still happens to me that I break down. And it may be because of something that is going on in my life at that particular time that I'm a little bit more vulnerable at that time. Or it may be because of what is going on. Like, for instance, what happened in Bosnia, or has been happening in Bosnia, Herzegovina, the slaughter there, I mean, the pain, the terrible things that have happened there, I can really, put myself in the place of the people that are suffering there. And then when I talk about my own, I'm thinking, but, mine is so minuscule in comparison to what the people there are experiencing at this particular time. And maybe the tears that I shed are really not for me, but for them. So it's been good to talk about it because as I said, it's been healing. And healing does have to take place. And I will never, ever forget. I'm touched, deeply touched, when people just like you, I suddenly see they have tears in their eyes. And I want to reach out and hug that person. And so please consider yourself hugged at this point. We'll do it for real later on. And I appreciate the interest that people show because we need to know what happened. You know, Santayana said, if we don't remember the past, then we're prone to make the same mistakes in the future. And we need to know. And it's not just the Germans that are capable of doing this. I think there is this seed of evil in each and every one of us. And each and every one of us is capable of doing that. We just need to be always vigilant to not do that and to be sensitive to other people and not look at people as them and us, but just as we. We're all the same and we all suffer the same when certain things happen. And if we could look at it this way, it's good. And if we get to know each other and get to appreciate the differences, then I think it's much more difficult for these evil things to happen. Because if we don't know each other and don't want to know each other, and if we hate, it's not only destructive for the person or the group that we hate, but it's really very self-destructive. Yes. I left Germany on May 18, 1939, with a children's transport to England. There were 500 of us on that transport. The youngest were twins, 6 months old, and the oldest were 17. I was 14 and a half. And I joined the Kindertransport in Frankfurt, which was not where I lived. I lived in Kindertransport. back forth, but I had left Kippenheim with my parents on May 16, 1938, with my parents to go to visit my uncle and aunt who lived near Frankfurt to say goodbye to them. And then I joined the transport in Frankfurt. And there are really two things that about that day when I got on that, after I got on that train, that are vivid in my mind. One was this young couple who handed their twins, who were 6 months old, to someone on the train and said, "Please take good care of our two babies." And I've often wondered whether they were ever reunited, because those two children have no knowledge whatsoever of their parents. The other was my parents were on the platform, and the window was open, and we chit-chatted, sort of small talk, last-minute admonitions, you know, be sure to be always polite and always say please and thank you, which were two words of my still very limited English vocabulary. And then the conductor or someone calling out that all aboard, or Alice Einstein, and the train, you know, there's a felt the tug of the train, and the train started to groan, and there was a whistle, and it started to move very slowly. And my parents, who had this almost artificial smile on their face, started to move along with the train as the train moved out of the station. And, you know, as the train moved faster and faster, they ran faster and faster, tears streaming down their faces, and their handkerchiefs waving goodbye, with their handkerchiefs waving goodbye to me, which is a German custom. When you say goodbye, you wave a handkerchief. And they were getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and finally they were just two dots, and then they were gone. I did not know at that point that I would never see them again. I learned some time ago that in 1989, a Children's Transport Association was formed, and I believe the first reunion of the Children's Transport Association was in London. I was not there, and just earlier this year, I decided that I wanted to know a little more about the Children's Transport Association, and a friend of mine who lives in New York City, and I have known her since England, since probably around 1943. She too came on a children's transport, but that's not how we knew each other, and she came at a different time. And I knew that she was very much associated with the Children's Transport Association, and so is her husband, whom I met in this country in the late 1940s. And so I contacted them and said, you know, tell me a little more about this. And I think I know, since I've retired earlier this year, I can free up some time. And she immediately responded and sent me some material and said, there is a Children's Transport Association meeting in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in November of this year. And maybe you're interested in coming. And I filled out all the necessary information and attended that conference. And I saw her there and her husband. And there was another, and I hadn't seen them for about 10 years. We do stay in touch with each other, though, by letter. And there was another person there who also came on a children's transport that I didn't know, whom I've also known from England since about 1948. And she lives in Chicago. And so it was great, you know, seeing them. I had a roommate whom I did not know ahead of time. She lives in New York City. And we were talking about where were you, when were you, what did you do? And it turns out that we both lived in the same hostel in Belsize Park at the same time, but we didn't know each other then. And so we talked about the evil matron of that hospital, Miss Glicksman, who was exploited each of us very much, and And I shared some things with her, and she shared some things. And so it sort of filled in the picture that I remembered but hadn't really thought about a great deal more. But the exciting thing were some of the other people that I met at the conference and heard their stories, and people who were invited to speak. And one of them was this wonderful man. His name is Nicholas Winton. He's 85 years old now, and he came from England special to attend this conference. He was invited a couple of years ago, apparently, also to the annual meeting, and was given an award at that time, but was not able to attend because he wasn't well enough. But he was there, and he's such a wonderful, loving, caring, warm person, and so modest, you know, almost understating what he has done. And he was a stockbroker before the war, and apparently spent every year, near the end of the year, 2 weeks, or his 2 weeks vacation in Italy with another friend. But in 1938, his friend had gone to Czechoslovakia and contacted him and said, "Why don't you come to Czechoslovakia instead and meet me there at such and such a hotel?" And so Mr. Winton went to Prague to meet his friend and found out that his friend had become involved in Prague in trying to rescue some of the elderly Jewish population that was in jeopardy. And Mr. Winton became aware of the plight of the children and spent his 2 weeks in Prague to set things in motion. He must have worked feverishly to do this, and then went back to England and went back to work, but in his spare time did whatever he could to set things in motion in England. And between the end of 1938 and the end of August, when the war was just before England declared war on Germany, he rescued 169 children. He refers to them, and they are now in their 60s and 70s, as my children. There were 60 some more children on the platform in Prague, ready to board the train when war broke out, and they were stranded there. Someone in the audience got up after Mr. Winton's presentation and said, "Mr. Winton, I never knew who rescued me. I think I'm one of your children." I mean, what a touching moment that was. Mr. Winton read to us a poem that he said his mother wrote, read to him. And he said it's that poem which really set him on the road to do what he did. And unfortunately, don't have that poem with me, but maybe I can give it to you, and you can attach it to this tape. There was home, so it's no problem. At one point during one of the sessions at this conference, I was sitting next to a man, and I said, "You know, I'm Hedy Epstein. What is your name? And what's your story?" While we were waiting for the program to begin, and he said his name was Henry Rosenthal, and he said he left Germany on a children's transport in, I believe it was in April 1941. And I said, "How is that possible?" And he pulled out his German passport with a great big red J on it, which stands for Jude or Jew. And he turned the pages and showed me the stamp where it said, where it showed that he left at that date. And he said there were, I think, 16 of them, ranging the age between 13 and 16, and he was about 14, I believe, at the time, and they traveled by train, unaccompanied by adults, through Holland, France, and Spain. In Spain, they boarded a ship, which took them to Nigeria, back to Portugal, to the Canary Islands, and eventually to the United States. And later on in that conference, I think it was the following day during a totally different session, Mr. Rosenthal got up and he tearfully said, "I feel very, very guilty about being successful." And someone asked him, "Why do you feel guilty? You should feel good about it that you've been successful." And he said, "I don't know why I feel this way," but the tears were just pouring down his face. And, you know, I don't want to be that analytical or pretend to be a psychiatrist, but I think it's probably part of feeling guilty that he survived, because he never heard from his parents anymore. Another speaker was a woman who was born in 1941. Her name was Lise Appel. At the time that she was born, her parents had another a child, a son, who was about 20 at that time. Lisa's mother was 49 years old when she decided to follow Hitler's call to have more children. And because she was already 49 at the time, she underwent some apparently very difficult surgery and was able to have another child. And Liesl was this child. When she was 2 weeks old, her parents dedicated her to Hitler. She recalled being paraded around by her parents as the prototype of an Aryan child, because she's very blonde, blue-eyed, and fair-skinned. When the war was over, or she felt she grew up in a very loving, warm household. When the war was over, her father all of a sudden one day miraculously disappeared, and her mother explained to her, because Liesl was only about 4 or 4 and a half at that time, that her father would be gone for a while, but he would be coming back. And when her father came back, she remembers him being a very different kind of a person, very subdued. She later on found out a little bit about the Nazi period and started to ask questions, started to read, asked her parents questions, and found out that her father during the war was the Nazi education minister in Poland. And when he was gone after the war for a period of time, he was in a denazification camp. And the more she found out about her parents' involvement during the Nazi period, the angrier she got, and the more her parents' guilt weighed heavily on her, to the point where she finally could no longer speak to her parents. She wouldn't permit her mother to touch her. And by the time she was 17, she could take it no longer, living at home, and she left and she went to England. She suffered from bouts of depression and was in treatment. She became involved in peace and social concerns in England, human rights concerns. Met a black African man, a musician. They married. They had 2 children. One of them thinks, and I'm not sure of the sex of the children, but one of them thinks that he is white and the other thinks he's black, but she described both of them as being very dark complected. She later was divorced, but still has an ongoing good relationship with this man. And then came at some point, came to the United States with her two children and became involved in human rights and civil rights issues in the United States. And at some point, someone said to her, you know, your value system is really a Jewish value system, and you have Jewish mores. And she said, what are you talking about? And so she decided to find out what Judaism is all about and became fascinated by it and decided to convert to Judaism and went through the process, learning how to become a Jew. And just before she actually was converted, she met a Jewish man who now is her husband and accompanied her very proudly to the conference. So here is this child dedicated to Hitler who first married a black man and then later on converted to Judaism and is married to a Jew. A myth that I carried with me all these years and never questioned was sort of destroyed for me when I listened to the stories of some of the people who, like me, went to England as children, but some of them were fortunate enough to be reunited with their families. Or maybe I'm editing when I say fortunate enough. It's maybe what I wish for myself. I always envisioned that the reunion with my parents would be just an absolutely wonderful thing, that I could tell them that I've tried to be the good child that you wanted me to be. I've not done anything wrong. And I never questioned that it would be anything other than that. But there's, for instance, this one man who was 7 when he went to England. And he was placed with a foster family, and it was a wonderful experience for him. He really bonded with the family, and he talks about my English foster family, my English foster parents, my English foster brothers. And after the war, he was reunited with his parents, and his parents were in France, and his parents spoke German and French. And he had totally forgotten his German. To this day, does not remember German. And he couldn't communicate with his parents because he spoke English and they spoke only French and German. And after a while, he learned enough French that they could communicate. But he was resentful because he loved his English family. And these people he didn't know. And he had only vague recollections. And life in England was comfortable. And now it was a very difficult life. His parents had nothing. And so he was very, very resentful. And so there were others who talked about the difficulties that they had. But the parents looked at them as the young child that they knew when he or she left. And now they were 5 or 6 years older. And they were no longer, perhaps, the 10-year-old, they're now 16, they're no longer 15, they're 21. But the parents are still looking at them and treating them as the very young children that they were, and how difficult that was. And that just shattered this, what I can now only refer to as a myth that I have. And I've been thinking about it a lot, and I still can't imagine that it would have been difficult. But at the same time, I have to wonder. You know, maybe it wouldn't have been as wonderful as I thought it would be. You know, I do know that sometimes I've asked myself the question. I've been involved in all kinds of things in my life, and how would my parents feel about it? Would they share my political viewpoints? And, of course, there's no answer to that. But I never went beyond the wondering. I never thought that it would be a problem. I always thought, it's going to be, would be wonderful.
So this organization,
the Kinder Transport Association, is it? Yes.
KTA.
KTA, yes. What do you refer to members as?
Well, But I thought,
what do you refer to yourselves as, the members?
The members referred to themselves as kinder. That's not how I referred to myself, although, you know, I know that, you know, I was a child and we were kinder, and it was a kinder transport that I was on. But when I talked about it, I've always called it a children's transport. I guess the audience, I guess, that I talked to wouldn't know what it means. But I think from now on, I will use that term and then use the translation